What drives me crazy is when businesses are using preconceived notions or assumptions about their customers without actually going through that journey themselves. Like, have you tried to apply to your own jobs? Have you tried to go through your website and be a customer? Can you find your phone number? Right? Like, and it's those type of things that I think are the biggest misses that a lot of businesses are just blindsided with.
Hi, welcome to another episode. I'm your host, Brian Maddox. With me today is Beth Trejo from ChatterKick. Welcome, Beth.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So if you could tell our audience just a little bit about your background to get started, then we'll kind of dig into some of the marketing conversation.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I am the CEO and founder of ChatterKick. We are a social first digital agency. So we started with social media and then kind of expanded our toolbox over the years. I am based in the Midwest, but our team is totally remote. And my background was in marketing and PR. But before I started ChatterKick as an agency 12 years ago, I had worked in a chamber of commerce. And I saw the problems and the needs of people in business. And I said, hey, I think I can help. So I started ChatterKick, and we've been at it for 12 years.
So that's really interesting. I want to, without, you know, necessarily shaming things like Chamber of Commerce, tell me what were the kind of like, you know, what were the strengths and weaknesses of that approach for a lot of people? Like the very first thing they do when they start a business, they go join a chamber. Yeah. Or if you're like me, you make that embarrassing mistake of putting those little tear off things on the back of the Panera. Didn't work. So what do people that join the chamber kind of get right and get wrong right out of the gate?
Well, I think I loved my time at the chamber. And my role was really going out and visiting with businesses and really trying to understand the challenges and what they needed help with from a big picture standpoint. And as you can imagine, they would tell you all the problems that they had. And I kind of noticed patterns individually of like they needed to get the word out about their business for hiring, and they needed to get the word out of their business for just sales. And I think that most people don't think of joining the chamber for those things, but there's a few little tricks that I learned working there that I think still apply today. The first one is that their directory listings, most of the time, if you become a member of a chamber, you get listed on their membership directory. Well, those directories aren't going to necessarily drive a ton of business in most cases, but they are extremely valuable SEO tools because they have lots of incoming and outgoing links because they have so many businesses in there. And oftentimes when I was there, I would notice that that would be the first thing that people's business would come up on because they just launched a website or maybe they were a brand new business and no one heard of them. So that was one of the things that I thought was a really underutilized benefit of being part of the chamber. And then the second, I would just say, just being able to be in the room with some leaders and CEOs, business men and women that maybe you wouldn't get the chance to, and working beside them as their peer, not necessarily trying to sell. I think that's one of the things people make mistakes in the beginning. They just want to like go and meet someone and sell to them. And that's not really how relationships get formed, right? I mean, we have to know somebody, or there may need to be a big need. Maybe you're not in the market at all for what they're selling. So I think it really, and what it taught me and how it relates to social even, is that relationships take time and they take trust to build. But once you do build those relationships, they add currency to your business in both future and like direct sales. And so it was kind of an interesting approach, handshakes and boardrooms to likes and follows, but there definitely was a lot of parallels with that.
So what was the impetus then behind starting social at that point? I mean, there you saw a need that wasn't getting fulfilled through the current work you were doing. How did then the ChatterKick kind of evolve from there, the social approach?
Yeah. So when I was at the chamber, and you know, the businesses were telling me all their problems, some of them I couldn't fix, right? Like the tax code, I couldn't fix a lot of these like big picture things. But when they would tell me things that I could fix directly, like, hey, I need to help setting up a Facebook page, or maybe you shouldn't, or maybe you should update your website, or maybe you should start posting this on a blog. And I could actually help them with that with like immediate success. And then they saw value from the chamber, right? And so I saw this little light bulb go off with people a lot. And I was like, that light bulb's interesting. Maybe that is a business I could offer. And I was getting well known in the chamber and business community for just my knowledge of this stuff. And so people were coming to me frequently on behalf of the chamber. Mm-hmm. And instead of turning the chamber into a social media agency, I decided to, start something and try it. So that's how the evolution kind of happened.
So that's awesome. And I think a lot of people that are the most successful in business actually start solving a problem that they run into on a regular basis. And it's like, maybe there's a monetization option there. When you started, how did you get your first several clients? I guess they all came from the chamber.
Well, it's funny. I started with a partner at that time, and it was really just me. So I knew that I was going to be doing the work, right? So I thought, I'll just cold call day one. Like I was ready to go. And it ended up, we actually had quite a few businesses reach out to us, even in the beginning. Within 7 days, I think I was managing over 190 Facebook pages. We had an account that was a franchise. We had other accounts come in with multiple social assets. So my problem in the beginning that I thought I was going to have, not getting enough business, was actually not the problem. And on the other side of it was like, how do I keep serving all of these clients without dropping the ball, right? And just making sure I was organized, I had the tools and systems, all of those things that you need when you start a business.
That's awesome. The how do you manage continued growth given that? I mean, are you still in that kind of like growth by referral phase, or do you have other approaches that you take on to grow the business?
Yeah. So we kind of had a couple of big hurdles. We grew organically for the first couple of years. I love speaking. And so I became a figure on the local speaking circuit, and that helped business development as we've gotten more and more team members. I've gotten into the national speaking circuit, so that's also made a difference. But we also have a full-time sales rep, and that transitioned probably about 6 or 7 years ago now, knowing that while I could be the face of the business, I didn't want to be the only person that was out there generating new business. And so we stood up a sales function and sales role probably earlier than most agencies do, and sometimes maybe should, but it really has helped us to sustain that consistent growth, over the last 5-6 years.
I'm hearing that a lot as a recurring theme with some of our recent guests. And what I'd like to know a little bit more is when you did that, when you made that decision, how did you begin the initial execution there to get a salesperson kind of up to speed? And what did you do to arm them for success?
So I will tell you, I made every mistake in the book on this. I was so messy. It was a horrible. Let me tell you all the things that you shouldn't do, because I would do it differently today. And now we have an amazing sales individual, and you know, we've got all those things figured out. So it's a lot easier once, you know, you kind of close the messiness. But so I sold my total stake in ChatterKick a couple of years in to an investment group out of a whole new market. And I did that because I knew that we needed to grow pretty substantially. We really wanted to take a small business, like 3 to 4 people, and make it something that had, you know, lots of employees or 10 plus employees, that was going to require a lot of capital. So I sold my stake in the business, still operated it, and everything on the front end was ChatterKick. We grew really dramatically from like, I think we were like 4 to 5 people. We grew to like 26 people in a very, very short window. So a lot of people. We did not have the infrastructure to grow that quickly. It was chaos at times. And most of those individuals were salespeople. and we opened up a new market in the South. And most of those salespeople didn't actually work out. Like, they didn't sell. We didn't have the tools. We didn't have the collateral. It was all in my head. And so it wasn't necessarily the sales individual's fault, although we didn't know how to hire salespeople either, right? Like, there's a whole just should have had a little bit more planning note in my mistake pocket. But I do think that what I learned from that is just you have to make sure your positioning's correct. You need to make sure you know how to hire the right type of salesperson. In the beginning, we hired high volume salespeople. And I always call that's like the hunting dog mindset, right? Just like, go get them, go get them, go get them. And those individuals were great. But because they like need that constant drip of dopamine from a sale, they would sell things that sometimes we didn't even offer. Or they would sell things incorrectly because they just wanted the sale. And so we kind of got into a spot where we had to say, hold up, we need someone who can really consultative sell this service. We need them to really understand enough about digital marketing and the tools that we're using. And really, they need to want the sale, not just for the money, but because they know it's going to be a long-term partnership. And so once we kind of figured that piece out and realized we didn't need four salespeople, we needed one, that also made a big difference.
Yeah. That process and the way you do that is something I think is really interesting. Every business has that as part of their sort of waypoints that they follow, like in their growth. And they go, oh yeah, that was the time I hired my first practitioner. Or that was the time I hired my first salesperson.
Yeah.
Those experiences, I think, are universally messy. So what are the barriers now to ChatterKick's growth?
I think right now, you know, just our field in marketing as a whole is shifting. And I think it will continue. It has, it's always evolved, and we're still going to need people to help tell businesses stories. Like, I don't think that there's going to be a, you know, fall or demise of marketing, but I think the way that we're doing it on behalf of businesses is changing at a very, very fast pace. And social media is still a big category of how individuals, especially individuals under the age of, you know, 40, want to interact with brands, but businesses are not embracing it at the pace that they really, that their customers want. And I think there's a lot of just misconceived notions. There's fear. There's legit security concerns. There's so many barriers that are in the way. That I think that's actually our biggest barrier to growth is just education and understanding the consumer. Even if you're in business, like, they're still humans.
Yeah, I run into that a lot. Like, don't forget, you're talking to people.
No. Yeah.
Wait, what? That's
yeah.
why you can't sell
it's a
all
supplier.
The time.
I'm like, if your supplier is still a person, right? They still laugh. They're not only, you know, one-sided. And I think that especially B2B marketing has had a lot of what they did in the past that's not working, or it's getting too expensive, or it's too slow. And so their ability to pivot is really based on their culture, their tool sets, their sales leaders, and, you know, the tools that they're able to use.
So with what you're working on and working towards with ChatterKick and what you've said so far, it leads me to believe that almost every business should have some form of, you know, social presence in that regard. Are there businesses this won't work for?
I think you still need to be strategic about your social media presence, but like, meaning you don't need to be everywhere and you don't need to be everything to everyone. Like, that's definitely not what I'm saying, but let's take the use case of hiring. Most all businesses need hiring at some point, right? And if you don't have a presence, whether that's a web presence or a social media presence, candidates may not even knock on your door, and you are missing them without any data point, without any understanding of what you could do differently, just because they don't know what they're getting into. And as a human, like, that's such an obvious thing. Like, would you go apply to a business that you had very little information. What is it really going to be like working there? Especially if it's, you know, a job that you'd want to stay at for a while, right? The good candidates want them to do their research so that the ones that are attracted to you are good fits, and the ones that are, you know, not a good fit really don't want to work for your business. And so if you don't let people see behind the curtain, it's really hard to attract that type of candidate or applicant that you're looking for. So let's just take that one use case. If I am looking to go work at a business and I Google the business name and I find their website, great. That's all I need, maybe. But what else is going to come up on that first page of Google? Right? It's going to be your social media account. It's going to be your reviews, Glassdoor reviews, which are social media. Like, there is all of this other stuff that comes up. And if you don't create that presence for your business, someone else will. Your employees will create it on Glassdoor. Your customers will be posting about you on TikTok. You're going to get out there, but it's just a matter of, like, who do you want to tell that story? And sometimes businesses make the strategic choice not to be in that spot, and that's their call. Like, I think that is, you know, as long as they know what they're saying no to, I'm 100% with them. What drives me crazy is when businesses are using preconceived notions or assumptions about their customers without actually going through that journey themselves. Like, have you tried to apply to your own jobs? Have you tried to go through your website and be a customer? Can you find your phone number? Right? Like, and it's those type of things that I think are the biggest misses that a lot of businesses are just blindsided with.
It sounds a lot, from the software development world, it sounds a lot like usability testing.
Yeah, there's totally.
That interface with the brand. How do you guys go about that in the beginning? I mean, particularly with businesses that are going to be very standoffish about it. It's sometimes hard to get that feedback, hard to help them come along on that journey. What do you guys tell in terms of that story to help folks come to this understanding?
So I am a speaker, and I get the privilege of going all across the country and speaking to groups, and we do workshops within those groups. And they're primarily key executives or CEOs in leadership in their companies, big and small businesses. And what I do for each of these individuals, and it does take some time, but I will go through just a basic applicant or a customer path and show them. The biggest thing is if someone refers me to your business, most businesses will not argue that would be a good fit, right? Like, if you refer me to another business, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a slam dunk at that time. It means you have a good opportunity to win. Right. But then what happens? They're going to need to find your phone number. They're going to need to get an email. They're going to want to do a little bit of research, even if it's just going on your website. So I go through those exercises with them. And I would say most of the business leaders have aha moments in that part. Like, oh, shoot, my website's not even working. We haven't posted on Facebook for 3 years, right? Like, and when you pull it up on a big screen in front of your peers, like, what I want for business leaders and CEOs, I want them to feel proud of what is out there about them, because that's
as opposed to hiding their face, right?
Yeah. Instead of trying to say, oh, you're getting, like, I see people typing when I'm doing it, like, someone's getting in trouble, right? And that's not my intention. But I do think that we don't do that enough. We don't stop and say, is this really what my customers or prospects want? Is this how they want to buy? If they're messaging me on Facebook or Instagram comments, do they want me to call them, or should I just message them back?
Right. It's a very powerful exercise to provide that insight in the moment. So Beth, how can people reach out to you if they want to get a hold of you, and who would represent somebody like that would be a good connection for you?
I'm pretty easy to contact on them. My LinkedIn is just Beth Trejo, Trejo. And all of our handles for Chatterkick are just Chatterkick. So Chatterkick. And awesome. My email is just straight beth@chatterkick.com.
Perfect. And the last question as we start to wrap up here, in your marketing journey so far, what are the three biggest lessons you've learned?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Number one is be curious. Always like want to learn more. I think that's really important. Another is to be kind. You never know what someone's going through on the other end of that conversation, whether it's a real conversation or it's a social media conversation. And I think the third is to make sure that you respond, follow, you know, call them back. When they call you, call them back, whatever that looks like. I think too many businesses just ignore their digital phones and they're real people on the other end of this. And I think if you really want to make business work on social media, you have to form those real human connections.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun.
Hey, you. Yes, you. It's 2024 and you don't have a podcast yet. Or maybe you do, but you're struggling with it. We will talk to you about that for free. We'll help you figure out where you might be stuck, whether or not we can help you for sure. But also, if you don't have one yet, what are the like first five things you can do? What are some great angles that you can use to make sure that your podcast was sustainable as you start to develop that moving forward? Those consults are free. So reach out at the link below in the show notes. Or email me at brian@podcastchef.com. Thanks.
Hi, this is Brian. Thanks for listening to the show. Our website, podcastchef.com, has a ton of useful information about how to best leverage podcasting to help you solve some of your business goals and challenges. You can also schedule a demo where we can show you how specifically Podcast Chef and our team can help you with some of your podcasting goals. Thanks.